Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Heart to Heart. I'm glad you stopped by tonight. I hope everybody had a nice weekend. I did. I had a big birthday party here for actually a grandson who turned 13, two friends, one turned 21, one turned 30. And myself, we had a little get-together. My 71st birthday is tomorrow, so we celebrated it with all the kids on Saturday. So it was a nice weekend. I hope yours was the same. I'm going to bring in Shelley right away because I think we have kind of a fun show planned tonight. We both had an opportunity to see a show on TV recently about children with psychic abilities, and they're actually being tutored by other people with the same kind of abilities, and helping them to learn, you know, what to recognize and how to handle this and handle that. It was very interesting, quite a bit over my head, I want to say. I think Shelley has watched a few more than I have, and she's also researched it a little bit. I brought up a few things on the computer, so hopefully we can have a good talk about it. I myself personally have a feeling that all of this kind of stuff goes together with reincarnation. I believe that when we come back time and time again, in different ways, different people, different everything, we bring some stuff with us. And it wouldn't surprise me if that didn't help some of these kids with a gift like that that they already have to kind of build on it, especially with the right kind of support and training. So let me bring Shell in. Hi, Shell.
Hi, Renee. Hi, everyone.
So it's very interesting, I think, and kind of fun and a little bit scary. What do you think?
Well, I don't think it's scary as much as it is sad. And the reason why I chose the word sad instead of scary is because a lot of kids that have psychic abilities are diagnosed with mental disorders that they actually do not have. Now, the show Psychic Kids doesn't portray any of those, but some of the other paranormal shows I've watched have people that are now mediums that do this as their work. They go in and they help people that are having issues with paranormal experiences in their homes. And some of them tell pretty tragic stories about when they were children. Some of them were put on psychiatric medications and things like that because the psychiatry doesn't recognize psychic ability. Although some psychiatrists now are delving into the perceptions of the brain, like Dr. Amen, who is doing some research with paranormal abilities, doing brain scans, while people that have been vetted as clairvoyant in some way, you know, they've come up with information that's just too accurate and couldn't come up by chance. And he sees that their brains are actually performing differently than they are in normal conversation. So there are some people in the neuropsychological medical field that are looking at the capacity of the brain to perceive other dimensions, other things around us, that there is that sensory ability. But unfortunately, a lot of kids, because it's not mainstream yet, go through a really hard time. If they're not lucky enough, and the kids on this show are very fortunate that their families are supportive of them and looking for help, otherwise they're classified as having mental disorders that they don't have and possibly put on drugs that can just traumatize them even more. Because it doesn't make the abilities go away. What it does is it just numbs them to the world and creates other issues like side effects and things like that. But I don't think it's so much scary because I think there is such a prevalence of paranormal activity on Earth right now. It's unprecedented. Now it seems like people that were skeptics, people that never believed in it, are all of a sudden having experiences. You know, people in their 50s and 60s and, you know, later on in life are having paranormal experiences for their first time. And you hear all these stories, all these new shows that are on TV now, people saying, you know, I was a skeptic. I always thought this was utter nonsense. And, you know, once you have an experience, you can tell it's different. It's so profound, and it literally changes you forever. You know, whether you have an experience at 20 or at 70, once you have a paranormal experience, you can never go back because you realize that there's something different. It feels different. There's no way of debunking it. There's no way of going in and finding an alternate explanation for things that happen, you know, and it's just happening more and more and more. So the fear factor for me, because I did live in fear for a couple of decades after some of the paranormal experiences I had when I was younger. But the more I learned, a lot of the fear went away because we really do have the ability to control our environments. We do have the ability not to allow negative influences around us or to impact us, even to the degree of maybe even being evil. And there are some what are called dark entities that share our space. They might be existing in a different dimension, and they can bleed through into our dimension deliberately or by request. But the bottom line is that there are influences from people that are just confused. They've just crossed over, maybe earthbound for one reason or another. And there are also influences that surround us all the time from darker entities, some that were human, some that were never human. And once you understand that each one of us has the ability to protect ourselves against the dark influences, a lot of the fear factor goes away. Also, when you understand that if you allow yourself, and it is something you can train yourself not to give into, but if you allow yourself to feel the fear, you're actually giving power to these influences and making their influence and their control over you even stronger. So that's another reason to really, if you are experiencing anything that you can't understand, that there's no explanation for, that makes you feel fearful and scared especially, it's worth your while studying this field because knowledge really is power, and the more you understand, a lot of the fear starts to subside, and that's what happened with me. Subjects that I couldn't even have talked about 10 years ago are very easy for me now because I've just learned so much and researched so much in the last decade or so that I've really kind of quelled that. But for about 20 years, I found it almost impossible to talk about some of the things that had happened to me, and I wouldn't study certain topics that had to do with with dark paranormal activity, and now none of it really scares me.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me say, when I said scary, I really didn't mean scary like what they can do or you know, how they can explain themselves. What's scary to me is that we have to depend on other adults to lead them, guide them, teach them, counsel them. That part is scary. Having a kid that has anything going on in their life that nobody's at, sex, as a for instance, or severe depression, and nobody to talk to. Imagine all of a sudden realizing that you know things that other people don't know a damn thing about, or you mm-hmm. see things or you feel things, and you have nobody to tell or talk to, no grown up. And from mm-hmm. what I've read, sometimes this happens at really, really young ages, mm-hmm. really young That's ages. Right. Right. And what's scary to me, because then they're dependent on the adults in their lives, and sometimes that's, you know, that's up for grabs whether the adults in their lives are adults.
Right. Well, like the woman that I follow, Amy Allen, she's on that show called Dead Files, which is one of my favorites because it's very, very well done. Her partner is an ex-New York City homicide detective. He's a typical New York City detective, no nonsense. He has no psychic ability. He almost, because I saw the interview where the producer of the show was interviewing both Amy Allen and Steve DeShavi after the show had aired for the first year. And he was very blunt. He says, I didn't want any part of this show. He says, I thought it was ridiculous. He says, my time as a police officer and a detective, because he was a homicide detective, he said, I work with psychics. I was never very impressed. He says, I never had anyone that really helped me solve the case. And he says, a lot of times the information they gave me, he said, wasn't very accurate and things like that. And he said, so the producer told him, look, do one investigation with Amy, and if you're not blown away by her abilities, he said that I'll look for somebody else. But he really liked Steve because of his no-nonsense approach to everything. And when you watch the show, you can see that in him. He's wonderful. Well, he did. He went on the first investigation with her. I don't even know that they ever aired that in season one. I think it was like a side episode, like a pilot type of thing. And she came up with, well, first of all, she does her walkthrough at night. Steve's not there. She's on her own. They don't even meet each other until they're sitting down with the clients that called them in for help. And she was spot on with everything because he does the research. He looks for things that would have happened there. She talked about different types of crimes that had taken place in the house. Several of the people showed themselves to her. She had a drawing done, and it just blew him away because he says that he gets composite drawings from actual eyewitnesses that aren't as accurate as what she comes up with, because she's actually visually seeing these people, and then she'll have a composite artist sit with her, and she describes to them scenes that she sees. And he said that he was so impressed by her accuracy, by facts she came up with, the dates. You know, she doesn't say, I saw somebody who was shot. She says, I saw somebody wearing these clothes. They were in their 40s or 50s. This was around like the 1890s. I mean, she doesn't just throw out general things that could fit any tragic area. You know, she can tell mm-hmm. somebody was choked or stabbed or poisoned or died of cancer. You know, it's not always, well, somebody died here. No, it's how they died, the year they died, about how old they were, if they were a man or a woman. Sometimes she does get names, but not always, because a lot of times when we cross over, and especially when we're in that earthbound state, sometimes people don't identify with their names anymore, but they will with how they died and they will with their physical appearance. So a lot of times she doesn't get names from people, but she gets a lot of other information about them. So it's just extraordinary. And when you see shows like this, but she had a very rough childhood. Until she was about 16, she thought she was nuts. She had nobody to talk to. She wasn't able to share this. She was tormented from the time she was 4 years old by what are called shadow people. And she's not the only one that tells this story, by the way. I've heard other mediums tell the same story. A lot of the psychic paranormal community still cannot seem to agree as to what shadow people are. They don't think they were ever humans. They don't know what type of interdimensional beings they are. Nobody seems to know how to move them on because nobody in the paranormal community seems to understand what shadow people are. Some human people that remain here will present themselves as shadow people, but they're really not. Some people think that they might be alien in nature, but there doesn't seem to be a consensus. And she was actually coerced when she was 4 years old by shadow people. At that point, she thought they were good, and they talked her into electrocuting herself at 4 years old, and she almost died. So she realized then that they weren't friends, that they were trying to kill her, because they kept saying, come with us, and we can be friends forever. And they had her, at 4 years old, they had her electrocute herself. Thank God she survived. And from that day to this, she's afraid of them because they manipulated her. So anytime she does deal with them on shows. But it took her a while. And I think she found out once she got older and she did some research with her family. I think she has an aunt who was also a medium and things like that. So I think there was someone else in her family, but it wasn't something that she could sit down and talk to anybody about. Kim Russo, who is, she's the one who had that show called The Haunting Of, and it was a spinoff from Celebrity Ghost Stories. I don't know if you ever saw that. I think that was on either A&E or Lifetime. I don't remember which station it was on. But Celebrity Ghost Stories was great because it was celebrities, people that are very famous, like Joan Rivers and Barry Bostwick and, you know, people like that, you know, famous actors, actresses, singers, you know, people in the public eye. And some of them had extraordinary experiences with the paranormal, with ghosts and things like that. Well, they did a spinoff show with Kim Russo, who is like Amy Allen. She's a physical medium also. And what they would do is they would go back. Anybody that participated in the ghost stories, the celebrity ghost stories, they would ask them if they wanted to go back to the place that they had told the story about with Kim Russo to see if they could get some closure on that event. And the ones that did, and I watched some of them. In fact, I watched the one with Billy Cyrus. I watched the one with Barry Bostwick and, you know, and some of the others. And it was fascinating what she was able to pick up with by going back to these places with them. And she was able to help all of them get closure and to figure out what exactly happened. In a few cases, there was some dark energy. In other cases, it was, like you were talking about reincarnation. I remember on three of the shows, the tie that brought them back to this place had to do with an event that had happened in another life, which I thought was fascinating. Amy Allen has come up with that on a couple of the Dead Files episodes. Now, I think there's been like 100 Dead Files episodes, and I think Amy Allen only brought up reincarnation on two or three of them. So it's not that common, but she and Kim Russo, both on a few of the episodes, said what's happening here is actually you're tied to this place from another lifetime, and that's why you had the experience, because you're actually starting to relive something that happened to you in another life. So it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating.
I think that a lot of people, I read years ago that in a lot of cases like that, when they're very young, they have some of those gifts, and because they never develop any of it, then, you know, it kind of subsides, or they lose the concentration that they need to follow through on it. But also the things that I've read have to do with what I said in the beginning of the show. A lot of times, you know, parents know something is up. I mean, there's all kinds of things on the internet. How do I know if my child is psychic? And how do I know if this is going on? And of course you don't. But I think there are some things that you can learn from your child if you listen. And this is missing a lot. I mean, I see it around me all the time. I see people with 3 and 4 kids. They're all, you know, in 5 years, just like I had mine. Everybody talks at once. And, you know, you're more caught up in the catastrophes than you are in just conversation. And so a lot of things, you know, a lot of things just get left by the wayside. But if you just converse with a young child, a lot of times, I've had both of my daughter's kids say things to me that, I mean, I've talked about it on the show. When Austin was a little guy, 3, he'd tell me about how we went to this one place every time we went by it, and it was like 15 miles from home. And every time, we remember when we used to go there and I was big and you were little?
Right.
And I laughed the first time he said it to me, and I said, "You were never big while I was little, honey." "Yes, you just don't remember, Graham." He doesn't remember that anymore. But for a good year, we never drove by there saying that. And Diana's other son told us, when he was like not even quite 3, told Diana that Joey was there. And
right.
The reason he knew the name was he saw a picture of my brother. And he said, I saw him. He was in the hallway at our house, Mommy. And Diana said, what are you talking about? And so I believe in all that stuff. I believe that children are, I mean, I have a baby on my lap almost every day now with this new great-grandchild. And let me tell you something. I sing to her. She lights up. She coos and almost sings with me. It's amazing. Now that's like an acquired thing.
Yep.
Singing.
Yep.
Or even verbalizing, right?
Yeah.
And
yep.
if she starts crying and I hold her up and I look at her, I say, "Are you mad at Grandma? Why are you mad?" And she'll push her little lip out and then she'll go from crying to telling me without words, of course, just with noises that yeah, she's unhappy about something. Now, this part of her will subside because she'll learn some words or she'll learn some actions, you know, like winging her baby bottle at you when it's empty. I mean, I've seen little kids do that a million times. They're taking off their own diaper when it's time to be potty trained. They start replacing some of those instinctual things with, you know, action. So I totally believe this. And when you talked to me about that this week and I started bringing up things, I see that there's a lot of sites where people think that that's what's going on. And I'm sure some of them are, you know, maybe not for real, but I'm sure some of them are. But I look through here and some of these things I remember experiencing. Flying dreams, out of body experiences. I was 10 years old, Shell, and I knew I could fly, but I wasn't supposed to tell anybody. I had to keep it a secret.
I used to have flying dreams. I still have them every now and then, but I had a lot when I was a kid. And I actually did have a legitimate out of body experience. And the reason why I say legitimate is because I had gone to a parapsychologist after a lot of what was happening to me when I was 16. It was like inside of a year, all kinds of stuff was happening to me. And somebody had found a parapsychologist and gave his name to my parents, and they took me there. And so the guy was trying to size me up because some of what happened to me was pretty extraordinary. And one of the things I was telling him was about one night when I had an out-of-body experience, and I was totally awake. I had not fallen asleep yet. I had literally just laid down. So it wasn't like I was dreaming. And literally within seconds, I was not aware of my physical body anymore. I felt like I was tumbling head over heels, but without a body. Just I had the sensation of spinning. And I could feel wind, but I couldn't see anything. So I don't know what I would have seen if the lights weren't out in our room. I don't know what I would have visualized. And then all of a sudden, you ever wake up from a dream and you like slam into your body and it's like jarring? Well, that's what happened to me. It's like I slammed into my body. It actually shook the entire bed I was in and it hurt. It was almost like I had fallen from a distance. My physical body had fallen from a distance, but I never felt my physical body. Well, anyway, so I'm describing this to the parapsychologist, and I'm like 16 years old at this time, and he takes this huge book, and he slams it down on the table in front of me, flips it open to, I don't know what page it was because he had a bunch of them earmarked, and he goes, "Read that package, that passage." Well, I started reading the passage, and I swear to God, it was almost word for word how I just described what happened to me. And I got about halfway through the sentence, and I was stunned. I think I went pale. And he goes, "You've never seen this book?" Because it was a book you could get in the library, and it was all about paranormal. So he thought what I had done was I researched this, and I just wanted attention. And he was shocked at how accurate I was and how I described it. But he could tell, because he was a psychologist, he could tell that my reaction was like not sheepish or I've never, you know, not defensive. I was stunned. I said, "What am I reading?" I said, "How did my story get in this book? What is this?" And he could see how confused I was all of a sudden. And he said, "You've never seen this book?" I said, "No." And then I took it and I flipped it over and I looked at the cover. I said, "What is this?" You know? And he says, "I'm sorry I did that." He says, "I really thought that, you know, the stories you were telling me weren't legitimate." He said, "Your reaction," he said, "couldn't have been fake, though." He said, and he was looking, you know, so then after that, he realized that I wasn't making this up for attention, that I was really experiencing all these things. And then he ran some tests at our house. I think he came with somebody, and they verified that there was actually stuff happening at our house. But I'll never forget his reaction, because the way I was describing things were too textbook. And he thought that I had just, and at that time I hadn't, I have since, but at that time I hadn't, I knew nothing about it. And what had happened is what I was reading were these two twin sisters that could travel out of body at will. They could go in and out of their bodies, but the first time it happened to them, it happened like it happened to me. And then they learned to master it, and they could astral travel, but then they would see things, because they would astral travel to specific places, and they talked about it. But their first out-of-body experience was like mine. It was very disorienting. They slammed back into their body. It hurt and all that, and that's what I was reading, and it startled me. Because what I said to him is, how did my story get in this book? You know, and I was like totally confused because I didn't realize what I was reading yet, you know. But yeah, so, you know, it's so easy. A lot of times what happens to children is that because they're told it's not real, it's not real, it's not real, they shut it down. Some people like Tim Russo and Amy Allen and some of the others, even though they might not have had support when they were children, their abilities are too magnified. They can't turn them off. In other cases, you have people that can shut it down deliberately by not tapping into that part of their brain anymore. There was one. There's a show called My Haunted House, but there was one episode that's kind of like what we're talking about here with psychic kids. This couple adopted a young girl. She was in her teens. They took her in as a foster child, and they just wanted to do that. They wanted to foster a teenager, somebody that wouldn't have a home otherwise. It was just something that they had wanted to do. And so they bring home this young teenager named Hazel, and she said something about when they brought her home, she says, "Don't worry, I won't be here long." And within like the first day or two, weird stuff starts happening around this young girl. They hear voices, the light bulbs keep breaking in her room. The wife of the couple started seeing things like people down the hallway from her, thinking it's Hazel, goes down there, doesn't see anybody, goes back to her room, she sees Hazel in her bed. So anyway, so weird stuff started happening in the house. And then all of a sudden, I forget what was the, the woman got injured, because when she walked in the room to look for Hazel, she stepped on one of the bulbs that had burst. It actually shattered and shot the glass across the room. Hazel was so freaked out that she was hiding in the closet. The woman walked in to look for Hazel, actually saw somebody in the bed, and it's like, "What's going on in here?" and steps on the glass, goes out, and then she realizes that whoever was in the bed wasn't Hazel. So anyway, so the story's a little bit more complicated than that, but what finally happened is the young girl walks into the room feeling bad about what happened to the woman who had taken her in as a foster child. And so she made her, like, dinner in bed, and she was brought it into the room for her because she couldn't walk on her foot. And just as she goes to walk in the room, the woman saw somebody in her room again. The woman looked like she had been in a fire, and it startled her. So when Hazel walked in the room, she's standing there because she sees this ghost also, and she says, "Oh, my God, you see her, don't you?" She's saying this to the woman. And as it turns out, she finally admits that the reason she never lasted in any of the other foster homes, she had been through many of them, is because everywhere she went, paranormal stuff would happen, and the people would get freaked out, thought she was crazy, and would just send her back. Well, it turns out this woman had had some experiences when she was a child. She did see things, but she was so scared by her, by the things that happened to her, that she shut her ability down. So the young girl Hazel was like, she said, "Well, I guess you're going to send me back like everybody else has done." And she said, "Why would I do that?" She said, "I have the opportunity now to help somebody in a way that I was never helped." And what she did is she said, "I did something I thought I would never do." She called a local psychic, a woman who was also a medium, to come in and counsel Hazel and to teach her how to use her abilities and what it turned out to be. And then, because you don't know what happened up until this point, you know, the real people are narrating the story. That's why I like these particular type of shows, because you're actually hearing from the real people. So then all of a sudden the real Hazel starts narrating, and she said, "This was the most profound experience of my life. I don't know what would have happened if these people hadn't fostered me." They ended up adopting her outright. And to this day, she stays in touch with them. And she said that meeting with the psychic changed the entire trajectory of her life. She didn't see it as a curse anymore. She saw it as a blessing. She's actually able to use her ability to help other people. And now she has real parents that understand her and accept her and all that. But what the psychic told her, what the medium, the counselor came in, told Hazel, is that the woman shut her abilities down by choice because they weren't as highly developed. She said there are certain people like you and me, she said, that are born with abilities that cannot ever be shut down. So she said, even if you ignore it, she said, the more you ignore it, the more you're going to suffer. She said, because they're not going to not be around you. So you have to start learning how to control your environment and set boundaries. And I've heard that from Amy Allen. I've heard that from Kim Russo, that there are certain people that are so attuned. And it's got to be that their brains have developed differently. And I think more and more children today are being born with this ability that can't be shut off. Just based on the number of children with these really profound paranormal experiences, and they can't ignore it. So it's really important that people start recognizing, especially parents of these gifted children, that they realize it really is a gift. It's not a curse. They are like a beacon for people that are earthbound for whatever reason. Maybe they died traumatically or they're confused and they need help to cross over or whatever. You know, kind of like the show Ghost Whisperer. Although that was a fictional story, it was based on a real person, by the way. James Franz Prague, who is a psychic medium, a real psychic medium, he was actually the producer of that show, and he based a lot of the episodes on things he actually went through as a psychic medium. So I found that fascinating. But at any rate, what the message that keeps coming through these shows over and over and over again is that there are people, you know, children and even adults, who have such acutely intense abilities that they can't shut them down. And if they are not helped to understand how to set boundaries, how to keep negative influences away from them, how to be able to say, look, this is my time now. I need to sleep. I can't be bothered right now. You're going to have to wait and talk to me tomorrow, like make appointments with the spirit world, so to speak. Okay. You actually can set boundaries like that. And all the really successful psychic mediums talk about that, because you really are like a Grand Central Station. You're open 24/7 if you don't set boundaries, and these people don't get proper rest, you know, the ones that don't know how to turn it on and off to make themselves available. Like Kim Russo in her book, Happy Medium, which is a wonderful book, by the way, one of the things she talked about in the beginning is exactly that, is that she was exhausted because she didn't know how to shut it off. She literally had people talking to her 24/7. She couldn't get sleep at night, and she had a trainer. She had a woman who was a psychic medium that told her, you've got to set boundaries. It's no different than dealing with live clients. Just because somebody's not in the physical form anymore, she said, you can still set boundaries and tell them to come back tomorrow. And so she developed a code where she had a particular candle when she was available to be of assistance to somebody from the other side, so to speak. She would put this candle out, And when she was no longer available and she needed her, she needed to be left alone, she would blow the candle out. Or it was something like that. And it worked. Once she set that intention, it was like it was just understood. And I think that that's what's so helpful with shows like Psychic Kids, because what they're being taught to do is exactly that, is how to set boundaries, how to use their abilities to help when they can be helpful, but to also not just leave themselves literally wide open 24/7, which is hazardous both physically and mentally for them.
Well, like I said, even if your child doesn't have any of these abilities, one of the most important things you can do for a child or even a young adult is listen every now and then. And I stop saying talk, because then everybody thinks that they're supposed to be lecturing their kid and telling them what to do without hearing what they have to say. And it's that, you know, I'm always blown away by what young people tell me. And if I have an opportunity to strike up a conversation with one of them that doesn't usually share or tell anything, you know, that's going on, and they start talking to me, I'm like excited, because I know that I'm going to hear something that I had no idea they knew anything about. It just amazes me when they do things like that. I have one right now that's being bullied in school. He's 12 years old, and he's not saying anything to anybody. And then something happened. So he said, they were just messing with me. And I said, and you didn't tell anybody because you were embarrassed? And he goes, no. So then I thought to myself, shut up, Rainey. You're trying to give him answers. Let him answer for himself. You know, instinctually, that's what we do. You know, oh, this is what, because we've had so many experiences on our own, we're pretty sure that we can answer the questions. And a lot of times it's something totally different. So in the regard to being super sensitive, I think if you're over the age of 50, you probably feel like you've learned a lot in your lifetime. I'm not saying that everybody over 50 thinks they're, you know, a whiz kid or good old Al Einstein or something like that. I don't mean that, but you think you've lived a lot and you've learned a lot along with living. And that's true. But if you've got a little person or young person that's experiencing something like what Shelley's talking about right now, who should shut up and listen? Just shut up and listen. And don't put words in their head. Don't put words in their mouth. Just listen. Hard to do. It's hard to do because I've been there. But it's usually worth it. And sometimes it just ends up being, you know, a kid being scared about something. And that's good too. Then you've helped. You know, you've maybe alleviated a little bit of their fear. One of the things that I learned when I started getting involved with the bullying is how scared everybody is. And they're scared to tell anybody that they're scared. And, of course, the bully movie showed time and time again when a kid would come home and say, Mom or Dad, this happened to me, and they'd be kind of teary-eyed. And one parent or the other would say, oh, don't be such a baby. Stand up on your own 2 feet. You really afraid of this person? Just, you know, do this and do that and stand up for yourself and be a big boy and be this and be that. Well, maybe they can't be. Maybe it's a lot more serious than you know it is. So one of the things that Izzy taught us was trying to teach the kids that they need to realize that when somebody else is saying those kind of things to them, they usually are not true. They're usually being said because they're trying to get your attention. And more often than not, that kid that's picking on you is being picked on by somebody else, which gives a kid a little bit better understanding of why they're being singled out. But when I started reading about this and I realized what kind of gifts we're talking about and how deep those gifts go, I thought to myself, how do they deal with that if they have nobody to talk to, Shelley? That's got to be horrible. Horrible.
Well, think about this. So the one kid on one of the shows, he's the counselor now, okay? So this The original Psychic Kids show was back in 2008, 2010. All right. I actually have the first season on DVD. They don't make DVDs anymore, which I wish they would, because not everybody has, like, you know, the access to do, like, cloud memory of shows and stuff like that. I prefer having the actual disc that I can pop in my player anytime I want, but the second season wasn't made that way. Anyway, but in the second season, they had those are most of the counselors now that are on the show. So now it's 10 years later. They ranged in age from, like, 14 to 16, so they're between 24 and 26 now, and they're the counselors. And one of the counselors was talking about how he was bullied when he was a teenager. So he really feels for these kids that feel very vulnerable. Like the one little boy, he was absolutely adorable. He was small, a little tiny African American boy. He was such a skinny little thing. Very, very impressive abilities, because they took him into a place, into a building he knew nothing about, and instantly started getting impressions. And at the end, you know, they sit down with the people who own the place, and he says, these are the impressions I got, and he nailed it. They're like, 1, 2, 3. He had never been to this place before, and he had picked up things that happened there and all that. So his parents were blown away, and it showed that this kid was, he really had some abilities. He wasn't just, you know, he really picked up on things. Anyway, so the counselor has been bullied, and this little boy's been being bullied. So, you know, and he really has to teach him, you know, he says, I don't like being different. Kids make fun of me. He said, well, you are different. And he says, don't be ashamed of that. He said, the ability you have, you can use to help people. He said, the ability you have is a wonderful ability. He said, you have to appreciate it, and you have to control it, and you can't be afraid of it. He said, once you realize that what you have is actually a gift, and that there's nothing wrong with you, he said, then you'll start feeling more comfortable about this, and people will start leaving you alone. And he says, and that's what happened. So a lot of kids, think about it, they're being bullied by ghosts because they're being scared and nobody can help them. Like like his parents, I don't think it was that episode. One of the parents on one of the other episodes, the poor woman was crying. She says, I can't help my child because I can't see what she sees. She said, how do you help somebody against something that's tormenting them that's invisible to you? She said, you know, it's one thing, and she even said, you know, it's one thing if you're being bullied by a kid at school or something like that, but she said, my daughter's being bullied by a ghost that I can't see. How do you protect your child? You know, so it's hard enough, you know, and think about the complexity of that. How hard is it to protect your children from physical bullies, from cyberbullying, from, you know, like when the schools can't step in or the authorities can't step in. That in itself is a frustration to a lot of parents, to teach their children how not to be vulnerable to bullying and to help them, you know, to react to situations so that they don't set themselves up for bullying. But what if they're being bullied by something that's intangible that you can't see? You know, that now you're taking it to a whole other level.
What kind of help did they give her? What did they tell her? How did they help her? Did they have something to say to her?
Well, they can't help the parent. They have to help the child, and that's the key. So what they told the mother is, they said, you're already doing the right thing is by teaching your child how to protect yourself. The problem is with these kids is they can't be protected by somebody else. And when you consider bullying, that's really the message from Izzy Kalman also, when you're talking about physical bullying from other kids, because you can't follow the kids around with a police officer or a bodyguard.
Right.
The kid has to learn how to not set themselves up to be a victim. So whether it's a physical bully, like kids in the school that are just mean and looking for somebody vulnerable to attack, or it's because this child has abilities that have been recognized on the other side from somebody that either it needs help or that's malevolent, okay, and they're attacking this child. The bottom line is the only person that can protect that child is the child. The child has to set the spiritual boundaries, has to set the psychic boundaries to allow only the type of energies that they're willing to deal with. to not allow negative, because in two of the episodes already, now there's only been seven of the shows, two of the shows already, the counselors that came in to help these kids, who are psychics also, picked up on very dark entities. It's like these kids are being attacked by dark entities already at this young age. That's why I'm saying there's a lot more of this influence on the planet than people realize. And they taught both of these children in those two episodes, one was a girl, one was a boy, they taught them how to force the entities out and set the boundaries to protect them and to protect their homes. And then you always see, like, 2 months later, you see the recap and the kids are there. And in both cases, the kids are no longer afraid of their homes. They were able to keep up with the, you know, the meditations and things. And it's all about what we talk about on the show, self-awareness, being aware of the energies that are around them. And if they do start feeling fearful, grounding themselves. And this is what I didn't know when I was a kid. I didn't know that I could tell negative energies they weren't permitted to be around me. And what happens when we go into fear mode, because most children, most adults don't know that, okay? When you don't know that you have the ability to say you are not permitted to be around me, you must leave, then guess what? They have to leave. But what happens is people get fearful. They do not command. They'll say things like, leave me alone or something like that. And but they're talking from a sense of fear, not a sense of commanding. You have to get a hold of yourself. You have to say you are not permitted to be here. You have to withdraw permission, because 9 times out of 10, dark entities enter a home or a situation by unintended invitation. And what I mean is somebody said something, did something that invited in some sort of negative energy, and you actually have to withdraw that invitation, or you have to withdraw that permission in specific words, such as saying you are no longer permitted to be here, or you are not permitted to be here, I command you to leave. You actually have to make it very, very forceful. There are all types of different types of prayers that call in, like archangels, like Archangel Michael and things like that. But they all use that. I think one of them actually taught the young man to use the Archangel Michael prayer or something like that, because it is very empowering. There are positive energies around us that can help. But the bottom line is, just like with physical bullies, because if you have a child that's being physically bullied by other students at a school, you can't follow them around 24/7. You've got to enable that child to have a sense of confidence about themselves, where they don't set themselves up to be vulnerable. Put them in martial arts. Start having them learn how to not feel fear, because the fear actually attracts people to be mean to them. It's no different with the paranormal realm. These kids have got to learn how to protect themselves. Their parents can't do it for them.
So now, are these kids taught these prayers, Shelley?
They're taught all different types of techniques. Some of them are prayers, some of them are meditations, some of them are grounding techniques. But yeah, they're taught many different things. That's why I like the show very much, because they're shown many tools like that. And anybody who is having issues with a child that they think might be having paranormal experiences can get a lot from watching the episodes, and they can say, oh my God, that's what my kid is going through, or that's something my kid has experienced. And they can kind of take some of the tools that are taught on the shows, like what these counselors, you know, now the show is an hour long and the counselors are actually spending 3 or 4 days with them. So obviously a lot more conversations are happening, a lot more training, but you get an idea of the types of advice that is given to these children, some of the training they go through, some of the things that they're taught. And then you also see that I think on the website, and I don't know if Psychic Kids has a website, but I know that there are websites out there. There are books out there that are geared towards helping parents to know how to make choices to help their children that might have sensitivities.
Well, I think that is important information. And like I said, when I brought some of this stuff up, I was bombarded by questions. I think my child, you know, is psychic. I think my child is hearing voices. I think my child is this, and asking for information.
And I didn't find anything that actually said, oh, well, this is what you should do or this is who you should contact. I didn't see anything like that. I think I'm going to spend some time looking to see if I can find something that's a little bit more, we've talked about this before. You know, this is not everybody can read between the lines. Not everybody can hear a flat out statement about something like this. Like you just said, you know, you need to say, you know, you're not welcome here. Well, I know a lot of kids that wouldn't have a clue on how to say that unless they were given the actual verbiage to use. And and I think that that's the kind of information that is important. And I had no idea. I knew it. I know it's out there because people have told me stories. And, of course, I've heard your story. And I have my own, even though the things that I talk about, nobody was frightened by. Nobody, I didn't feel like somebody needed some kind of help to understand something. I just, is that what you wanted, a pen? And I think, do you need paper too? I think that at the end of the day, though, that, you know, everybody, you know, they need extra help, Shell. They really need extra help when it comes down to stuff like that, because they don't have an idea of the verbiage to use and they don't understand how they can say something. I mean, even you saying that to me, I'm imagining myself when I was a kid and I was, you know, I was shy. I know that's hard to believe now. I was very sweet. That's also kind of hard to believe. But that's who I was when I was a little girl. And if somebody just said, you know, if I said to somebody, somebody's picking on me, and my parents or my grandma or my grandpa or somebody said, you just tell them to stay away from you. You're a big girl. Just tell them to stay away from you. I wouldn't have been able to do that when I was a little girl. I wouldn't have been able to. And I think there's a lot of kids that can't. However, the exact words to say and told me, stand right up and say, you know, my mom said, if you pick on me anymore, I'm supposed to, you know, go to the principal and whatever she told me to say. If I'd have been able to say that, that would have given me some security. So I'm thinking even the parents that are involved in this, they're going to need verbiage. I have cash for you. So I think that that's a big part of it.
Well, I think that there probably is group counseling. I mean, I don't doubt that. I mean, the parents are involved in the whole process. They're sitting there. They're listening to what's being said to their children. So remember, it's an hour-long show covering what happens over days with these, where there's interacting. So they just, you know, they just take little bits and pieces to edit out and present the show to us, you know, but there's a lot of time that they're spending with this family, so there's much more conversation going on. I'm sure that they give pointers to the parents so that the parents can help the children feel that they're not vulnerable anymore, to help support them in the exercises, because a lot of them are given exercises. Meditation is one of the tools that several of them use. Now, the one young man is actually from American Indian descent. So he had very, very ritual background. So although his father was very much into Indian rituals and they did sweat lodge things and things like that, he does not have the abilities his son has. But because of his culture, when his son started having experiences, he totally believed in them because they believe in a very powerful spiritual world. His father just never had the sensitivities, but grew up in a culture that accepted that that happens. And was really excited when he found out that his son had these abilities. But in the same token, his son was being scared by what he was saying. He was being tormented by it. So that's when the father sought out to get help. So the counselor that went in to help this family actually took the time to learn some of the American Indian traditions that would actually help this young man protect himself. So I thought that was very important. Because what a lot of paranormal investigators will talk about is that there's no right or wrong when it comes to, like, you can't just say, oh, you say the Our Father or you pray to Archangel Michael. You know, there are Hindus, there are people from the Jewish faith, there are Buddhists. There are protective prayers and rituals and traditions and meditations across all the major world religions. And there's no right or wrong. Whichever one is going to make you feel protected is the one that you should embrace, because it's all very cultural, mm-hmm. and they're all tapping into that same universal spiritual energy that either enhances the light and then pushes out the dark. And this is what creates different types of protective barriers, for lack of a better word, around these type of sensitive people.
Mhm. Well, like I said, I my mind is very open to it. I believe in a good majority of it. I also know that there always has to be room for people's imagination, because once you get involved in something like that, part of it does get increased with your imagination, I see nothing wrong with that. I think that helps you cope. But I want to really, really, if you're listening, and if you listen tomorrow when it's streaming or tonight when it's streaming on my Facebook page, and you think that one of your children, or you maybe you have been plagued with something like this your whole life, kind of like Shelley was, and never had any real answers. I think you need to do a little bit of research and find out a little bit about it. And I think you need to talk. And I think the more you talk with the child, the more you'll learn about them, number one, and the more inquisitive they will be, because they love to have mommy and daddy interested in the things that they're interested in. I never met a child that, if you could talk to them about the game that they're playing on a video, or the fact that they can do an ollie on their skateboard, if you talk to them about something that relates to them, almost always they want to be heard and they want to talk mm-hmm. about it. I think it's something right. that's going to become a part of our future, probably a good thing. And I think it's something that we all need to understand a little bit and embrace to make the transition a little bit easier, perhaps. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm saying that with an open mind, not knowing whether I'm right or wrong. But if my mind stays opened, I have to be prepared to know that just with my own stories, it's not all verbatim. Because everybody has, you know, the ability to, you know, embellish and make their story more interesting. But where there's smoke, there's fire. And mm-hmm. I have seen children and heard children can say things that you're like, what the hell did he just say or she just say? Mm-hmm. Or what did they just do? And Shell and I have talked many times about reincarnation, and I think a lot of it is connected. So be aware.
Yeah,
talk
I agree.
To your kids.
I agree.
Yep. If you're worried about something and you don't have anybody to talk to, please call the show. You're always welcome to call and talk to us, 323-870-4622, and it's usually on my Facebook page. And I think I've already heard from two people on Facebook who have got like 10-year-olds, and they're already asking me questions. So we'll see what we generate. But we're mm-hmm. just about out of time. We'll be back on Wednesday. I'd like to touch base on some more health stuff with Shelley and Monica. And I'm hoping to get Sean still. He's called me 3 or 4 times, and I pick a time, and he can't be there, and he picks a time, and I can't do it. So we'll get it organized. So everybody have a great evening. And if something like this is going on in your life, you know, wrap your arms around it and figure out what you're going to do about it. It's the best advice I can give you. So God bless everybody, and have a good evening. Thanks, honey. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Rainy. Okay. God bless, and you have a wonderful evening.
Bye-bye.